You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The name Typhoid Mary conjures up a sinister figure who spreads disease wherever she goes. But according to Mary Beth Keene's novel Fever, the actual Mary Mallon was far from sinister. The novel is set in early 1900s New York, where Mallon lived in tenements while she worked as a cook for some of the city's wealthiest families. It's published by Scribner, and Mary Beth Keene was a guest on our show in March to discuss it. We're replaying that interview for you today. I began by asking her, there have been nonfiction accounts of Mary Mallon. What did you hope to do differently by turning her story into a novel?
My main goal with this novel was to raise Mary from her one-dimensional status. Typhoid Mary has been a character since her case made the newspapers at the time, and I just wanted to add another dimension to her life.
It allows you to get inside her head.
Yeah, and make her a full, you know, vivid human being with an interior life and all that I'm sure she had.
But you stuck pretty close to the actual facts?
I stuck to the best-known facts. You know, the times of her incarceration and the best known stories about how much she fought and whatnot. But in between, I was able to invent, because there's not that much on record about how she felt or, you know, what exactly she was doing on North Brother and so on.
And why isn't there much on record? Didn't people ask her what were you thinking?
They did ask her, but the accounts aren't all that trustworthy. A lot of the quotes in the papers contradict one another, and a lot of her story is told by people who are interpreting her, you know, the doctors, the lawyers, and whatnot.
Do we know how many people she infected?
It's between 47 and 50 people officially on record. It's likely that she infected more people than that they just don't know about, and three of those cases resulted in death.
And they were children?
Two were adults, and one was a child, yeah.
Were people who'd contracted typhoid but survived left with any symptoms?
They discovered soon after Mary's capture that people who had typhoid fever in many cases went on to become chronic carriers, up to, I think, 4% of people. So in that way, they, like Mary, carried the illness for a longer period of time.
Although, in her case, she never had come down with typhoid.
She always claimed to have never had typhoid fever until her death. That's what she claimed. But it's likely, you know, I'm still deciding what I think about that. I think it's likely she did have a mild case and just didn't recognize it as typhoid fever, which is possible.
Well, what would she have thought it was? Just a flu?
Yeah, exactly. A terrible cold, a flu. Some people have very, very mild symptoms.
Well, how much typhoid fever was there? At this time?
Around 1910, there were 35,000 people in the U.S. died of typhoid fever. In New York City, there were around 4,000 cases per year between 1900 and 1907, which is the year Mary was captured, and 10% of those were fatal.
So this is almost as bad as tuberculosis.
It wasn't quite as bad. It doesn't make the top five. It wasn't flu, tuberculosis, enteritis. These things were worse, but typhoid fever was still highly feared, you know, especially in the tenements.
Now, Mallon came to New York from Ireland. How old was she?
She was 14.
Were your parents Irish immigrants?
They were.
Is that a reason you became interested in the story?
Yeah, I think it's a reason I identified with her. They were are firmly in the working class, and Mallon was part of the servant class, and I think she had to be a survivor, like all immigrants have to be.
Your father worked building tunnels, Colin McCann has written a novel about Irish immigrants building the tunnels. It was a rather common profession.
Yeah. I mean, for Irish men, I was lucky enough to go down into a tunnel when I was working on my first novel, and there are a lot of Irish immigrants working in the tunnels, yeah.
What about cooks? Was Mary Mallon doing something a lot of Irish immigrants did?
Yeah, a lot of Irish women. A lot of cooks at that time were Irish women.
Would it have been considered a coveted job?
I think so. And that's part of the frustration she had when she was released. And they helped her get a job as a laundress. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, working in a laundry was a far different, you know, level than being a cook. She really was one of the heads of the household staff. So,
and often in some families, as we've seen in television series from Britain, considered almost members of the family.
Exactly, yeah.
So how did Mallon spread typhoid? Well, first of all, what did people know about it at the time? Did they understand that it was spread through germs?
Germ theory was around, but it was still new. And I think amongst the common people, they didn't quite understand. You know, they still thought these miasmas were the way everybody caught everything. They knew that having clean water was important, and the wealthy families knew that having a very pristine, clean home was what was going to keep illness out. But she was basically spreading typhoid fever through her food, through her cooking.
And some people thought it was spread through swamp gases. Others that it could be transmitted by hanging on the straps on subway cars.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, people thought if you threw your chicken carcasses after dinner onto the curb and then you walked by the next day and got an odor, then that is the, you know, resulted in diphtheria 2 weeks later.
Well, people understood that being clean was a factor. Didn't Mary say she didn't wash her hands while she was working in the kitchen?
There are different stories about this. Some people accused her of never washing her hands, and this is what I mean about the quotes. In some places, she's quoted as saying that she didn't ever wash her hands, and in some places, experts said that it would have been almost impossible for her to wash her hands to the degree that you would need to in order to get rid of all the bacteria. And so, you know, I had to decide where I stood on that.
Did she just work from family to family, or did she kind of settle into households for a while?
She did move around a lot, and that was a strike against her to some extent. She stayed with some families for, you know, a longer period than others. Sometimes she just worked for the summer or filled in for other cooks or for a season, you know, and whatnot. But she must have been good because she kept getting hired by these families that who could have afforded anybody.
How was it determined that she was spreading the disease, especially as somebody who they thought had never had typhoid?
Well, there had been rumors out of Germany that this such a thing was possible. You could carry a disease without showing symptoms of it. And Dr. George Soper, he was a medical investigator at the time, he was hired by a wealthy family to investigate an outbreak that had taken place in their home in Oyster Bay. And they were afraid that they wouldn't be able to rent the house again if they didn't, you know, pinpoint the source of typhoid fever. So he went, he got on the case, and he tested the water, and he did, you know, all the usual tests, and figured out that a new cook arrived on the scene, Mary Mallon, just a few short weeks before the outbreak occurred.
And then she is part of the story is that she brandished a knife
and threatened him with it. It took him a little while to track her down. He sort of gathered his evidence first. He checked with other families she'd worked for, and sure enough, there had been typhoid fever in several of them, though not all of them. And she went after him apparently with a roasting fork and a knife and told him, get out of my kitchen, you know. And she really, it's really on the records all over the place how vocal she was. She had a nasty mouth, which I sort of loved. And she wasn't afraid of authority, you know. And she must have been terrified as well.
My guest is Mary Beth Keene, her latest novel, Fever. According to your novel, she never entirely accepted that she was responsible for the typhoid outbreak.
Yeah.
How do we know that?
Well, we don't know it. I mean, what we do know is that she didn't want to talk about it during her time on North Brother Island. And, you know, this is a fiction after all, and I had to create my character. And I think she, from what I gathered, she lived in a state of denial for her whole life.
Well, haven't some reviewers felt that you were too soft on Mary Mallon and her sense of responsibility for spreading a deadly disease?
There's one reviewer I know of who may think that.
You've cast her as your heroine.
Well, I don't like the word heroine. I don't think she's a victim, for sure. I don't think she's a villain either. That was part of my point. I think Dr. Soper's story, you know, some people have described him as the hero. His story has been told. It's in the medical texts. It's in history. You know, we know that he was right, and we know that she was passing typhoid fever, but that I think having a disease doesn't make you a criminal, and it's hard. It must have been really difficult for her to understand what was happening.
And then she was a woman. She was an Irish immigrant. She was a servant. She was a single woman involved in a relationship.
Yeah.
All of these things would stigmatize her even more.
Absolutely. And I really believe during the course of my research, if she had infected a tenement with hundreds of people in it and more deaths had taken place, she wouldn't have been in the situation she was in.
So she was called a healthy carrier.
Yeah.
Did they discover other healthy carriers?
They did. It wasn't long after her first incarceration that they realized that there must be healthy carriers all over New York City. And, you know, as several years went by, it became overwhelming trying to keep track of them all. And then they realized that it didn't really matter unless you were working in the food industry.
So why was she singled out to be called Typhoid Mary? Also, wasn't she called the germ woman?
She was. I mean, yes, there's no Typhoid Bob or Typhoid Joe, but I think it's for the reasons you mentioned. Well, first, she was first. I think first being first matters. And I think it was who she was. For some reason, Mary Mallon alone evoked these deep-seated social prejudices in people. And I think that's really part of her story. And she was right to suspect them of keeping her for reasons other than typhoid.
Do you think it's also because she stood up for herself?
I think so. And that was surprising to them. You know, at a time when a servant wasn't really allowed to have an opinion in the presence of their employer, that she would say, no, get out of here. Here's my fork. Get out of my kitchen. I'm going to wave my knife at you, to a doctor, an educated person. You know, that was really not done. And it was for sure a strike against her.
How did Mary Mallon secure legal counsel when she was barely in touch with the outside world and couldn't have had all that much money?
That was somewhat unclear. You know, I had to take a few liberties there. Mr. O'Neill really was her lawyer, but how she got him exactly is not 100% clear.
And rather sophisticated defense, including a writ of habeas corpus being filed.
Yeah. And that's what the only letter written in her hand in her own voice is part of that habeas corpus file.
So she was released?
She wasn't released immediately, but then a new health commissioner took office in 1910, and he released her.
And there were orders that she would never cook again.
Yeah, she signed an affidavit and said she'd never cook again. And they helped her get a job at a laundry, which, you know, probably paid about a third of what she was making as a cook.
So she went back to cooking.
She did go back.
Change her name?
Well, yeah. That's one thing that she did. She did. She changed her name to Mary Brown, and she went back cooking at Sloan Maternity Hospital, is what it was called at the time.
And did people get sick again?
They did, yeah.
She must have understood by then that she was the cause.
She, I mean, in my telling of it, that's when her stomach really sank, and she realized that it must be true what they're saying about her. However, she also cooked for a lot of people who didn't get sick. And, you know, their testing of her on North Brother showed that she only carried the bacteria a certain percentage of the time and then sometimes not.
But working at a maternity hospital.
Yeah, that was, you know, I don't think I would have been interested in her if she weren't as complicated as she is. And so that was, you know, that's really the most terrible thing that she did. And I don't believe she was evil. And so I had to decide that she didn't really believe this about herself until after that took place.
You've said that the research came up with a lot of contradictions. So you had to pick and choose to some degree. Is there still a lot of material out there?
Oh, yeah. You kind of have to read between the lines. The most difficult things to find were perspectives from the servant class. You know, they're not the people writing their memoirs and writing letters and keeping them for posterity. So that was the most difficult thing to find.
You say you looked at a series of short autobiographies, the everyday lives of undistinguished Americans as told by themselves.
Yeah, that was the most valuable resource I had.
Who put that together?
Henry Holt put it together in 1906 and collected them. And if people weren't literate, somebody would write it down for them verbatim. And you can tell when you read that nobody had edited these pieces, or at least they didn't get a heavy edit. And so I got to see, you know, what people felt like if they arrived from, you know, France or Germany or China or, you know, anywhere and work, you know, in different situations and how they felt about that.
And you can bring into the story the Triangle Fire, Shirtwaist Fire, or the sinking of the Titanic.
Right.
Because these same sorts of people, there were a lot of Mary Mallons in effect. I'm not talking about carrying typhoid. I just mean the rest of her life.
I tried to bring in things that people would have talked about, you know, in the tenements, around the tables, at work, you know, while they were working. And so in that way, the presidential biographies weren't helpful to me. You know, if I wanted it to ring true, I wanted to access what people were moved by in their everyday life. And I think the Titanic is something I feel certain people were talking about for a long time.
Mary Beth Keene's latest novel, the follow-up to The Walking People, is Fever. It is published by, what is it,
Scribner? Yeah.
And I thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.